Hey, 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 friends. Welcome to Tuesday. Welcome to interview episode day. I love Tuesdays. You know, they're just a great day. It's not Monday. It's not Wednesday. It's not Thursday. And it ain't Friday. It's Tuesday. If that's not some profound poetry there, I'm just not sure what is, quite frankly. You know, last week at this time, we here in Kansas City in the Midwest, we were battling these really cold temperatures, just frigid as all get out. We live in this beautiful old building in Kansas City, downtown Kansas City, that was like an old hardware store that's been converted into apartments. It's got these great high ceilings and brick walls, but with the charm of an old building comes these old windows, and our windows were from the inside, like icing over on the sides of the window. And me and my husband had this opportunity, like this moment where we just looked at each other and we were just like, you know, kind of like I was looking at him, he was looking at me, and we were kind of like, is this normal? Should we have like icicles on the inside of our windows? And I just kind of, you know, I wasn't sure, but I have lived, you know, through my time in college, I lived in some old buildings, and I think that's kind of par for the course. But I mean, we had some layers of ice on the inside of our windows. And we were just kind of like, it's cold. That being said, it is today going to be 65 degrees here in Kansas City, which feels basically like I could go outside in a swimsuit and just soak up the rays because it feels so warm. Even yesterday, it was 40, 45, then it got up to 50 degrees. And even that felt so warm. I mean, outside in sweatshirts, it was crazy and so amazing. And it kind of feels like spring, and it kind of makes me excited and just can't wait, you guys. Winter just needs to end. Does anyone else agree with me? Please tell me you agree with me. In other non-weather related news, my wrinkly oldest puppy, Gatsby, who I'm sure if you follow me on social media, you have seen many a picture of him. He is the light of my life. He's, gosh, I'm looking at him right now, you guys. He's been having some trouble with his eyes, and I finally made an appointment, took him to the vet, and they had to put him under this morning, sedate him a little bit so that they could take a peek in there and really see what was going on because they weren't sure what was going on. And he's got so much skin around his eyes. And I picked him up and brought him home, you know, just before I started recording this. And you guys, he's still a little loopy and he's like kind of wandering around he just looked up when he saw me laugh at him. You guys, it's so mean. But he's like, he's kind of like walking around the apartment, like kind of like half with it, half not with it. And he'll kind of like stumble every once in a while because he's just a little loopy, you guys. It's so mean, but it's so funny. And he's so cute. You know, he's so cute just in general, but then you just loop him up a little bit and it's just even cuter. So if you hear some random stumbling in the background, or if I leap out of here, out of this introduction and run to his side to care for him, it's because he fell over. Now, all of those life happenings out of the way, let's get into today's interview guest. Today's guest is Brandon Bodendorfer. You guys, say that name three times fast. Like, I just dare you. I have known and worked with Brandon for a number of years now, so this was a fun conversation for me because I have worked quite closely with him for a number of years doing freelance content for one of his businesses, one of his platforms. And my best friend Bree, who was on the podcast last week and has been on the podcast many times, she works for Brandon. So this is someone who I've worked quite closely with. So it was nice to be able to turn, you know, the interview style side of this onto him, because he and I have a lot of conversations about work-related things, whether I'm doing a story for them or whether we're planning content or other things. But to kind of turn the angle and have him just be interviewed was fun. And I learned some things about him in this interview. You'll actually hear me be surprised by some of the stories he tells me about his, you know, growing up, his adolescence, his childhood, things like that. So it was really fun to get to that next level with him and learn more about him. So let's get to the specs, all right? Brandon is an entrepreneur and a creative based in central Wisconsin. Now, Brandon has started several different businesses, but his most well-known, and I would argue one of his most successful, is a really well-known online news platform called On Focus, which delivers news, local sports, and entertainment to the central Wisconsin area. The platform has grown a huge amount in just a couple of years, and it's really kind of one of those things where he saw an opening and a way to serve people and a gap in the market, and he just kind of decided to go all guns a-blazing and create something, and it's turned into something really, really cool and really, really beautiful. We talk about a lot of different things in this episode. We talk about Brandon's upbringing, his decision to forego college, his kind of first business, kind of the ups and downs of being an entrepreneur. We also talk about how being an entrepreneur was different when he was starting out compared to kind of what it is like now. And some of the things that you can learn from entrepreneurship back then and entrepreneurship, you know, nowadays. Brandon is one of those guys who has like an idea a minute, and he is always curious to solve problems and to come up with new ways to serve, you know, a gap in the market and to how to, you know, connect people in a way that promotes collaboration instead of competition. And I really admire that about him. I also have to say he has energy for days, you guys. This guy wakes up at insane times in the morning just to like go shoot wildlife with his camera. Like, he's that type of person who's just like excited about a lot of different things and, you know, just lets that propel him in what he does. And I really admire that about him. If you are a budding entrepreneur, or you're just a creative, or just someone with an idea that you think you might want to turn into a business, you are going to eat this conversation up. Without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with Brandon Bodendorfer.
Welcome to the show, my friend. How's it going?
It's going pretty good. I mean, we're in Wisconsin. It's a positive temperature in the middle of February, so I chalked it up as a win.
You can't complain about that. February, I was saying the other day, is the longest short month. It's just miserable. I hate February. It's the worst month.
Well, I'm just impressed that so many businesses are going to be closed this year on February 29th, 30th, and 31st. I mean, it's really challenging, but I think once we get through and March 1st comes, it'll be just a great month and a great year.
Gosh, God willing. All right. So, you know where we start every show? Is with the same question. And the question is, where did you grow up and what were you like as a child?
What was I like as a child? Well, I was someone that just really was just free spirited and open minded to a lot of things. I wanted to be in business at a very young age. My whole family has always been entrepreneurs, and I always just had this zest for like creating and doing my own things and being someone that made its own way through life. I've never been somebody that has liked to follow the rules. I'm not a big rule follower. And I wasn't growing up. I didn't get into trouble, but I always found a different way of going about things. And, you know, I like to do a lot of things that I wasn't good at. To this day, I still like to sing karaoke.
Oh, gosh.
But I really am horrible at singing, period. So growing up, I would like pretend to be, you know, a singer and do different things. But throughout life, I learned that a lot of times when somebody tells you you're not capable of doing something or you're not good at something, it should be more ambition. It just should give you the reason to learn it, achieve it, and accomplish it and be triumphant. And
yeah,
that was pretty much me growing up. And I think a lot of that is still in me. I'm very much still a kid. Mm-hmm. In a lot of ways. I like to say I'm an old 17-year-old.
Why 17?
Because at 18, you become an adult. And
that's true.
And 17 just seems a little more mature than 16.
Point well made. All right. So what was college like for you? Did you go to college? I don't even know the answer to this.
No, I didn't actually. So
didn't.
No, kind of an interesting story there. Did I have passion to go to school? Absolutely did. But I didn't want to go to school just to go to school. And I didn't want to spend money not knowing what I wanted to go to school for. Now, yes, a lot of people told me, oh, the first 2 years, you just go, you take your basics. In that time, you'll figure out what is it you want to be. And then you'll, you know, go down that road and become educated in whatever industry or field is that you want to go to. And I just, to me, I couldn't embrace the idea of making an investment into my education when I wasn't really certain what it was I wanted to do. So I had this like subtle dream, and I'll say subtle because it was a dream of mine, but yet at the same time when I didn't achieve it, it didn't really pull up my heartstrings, but I wanted to become an FFA officer in the state of Wisconsin. So what they would do is every year, 11 individuals would get the opportunity in the state of Wisconsin to work for DPI, which is Department of Public Instruction. Mm-hmm. And they would get to go around the state and teach a culture education. And I applied for this, and I unfortunately was not elected. And I remember when I got out of that, and I call it a conference or call it just off the stage, and I realized I didn't really achieve it. You know, I had this moment of like, okay, what am I going to do? Where is the next few months going to bring me? Because I was in the middle of the summer, just out of high school, just had graduated. And the simple answer was, well, I'm going to go to work. I'm going to basically save up some money and figure out what it is I want to do and go to school next year and be set for it.
I didn't know you were that into agriculture. Did you grow up on a farm, or like, I literally did not know that at all.
So yes, I grew up on what I would call a hobby farm.
Okay.
My dad would call it a farm, but I would call it a hobby farm.
There is a difference.
He was a truck driver, and he had 60 acres or 40 acres of crop that he cropped every year. And then he had beef and some cattle, but he really didn't pay attention to him when he was on a road, over road trucking, but it was something he definitely did on the weekends when he was home. And it still gave me a pretty real life experience of ag culture. Mm-hmm. My uncles were in the hay business, and they, back in, you know, this would be in the 80s and the 90s before these big square bales came that you see now, they would, for their income, they would haul square bales, the little tiny bales that you see now at like Menards or Fleet Farm or Walmart that people buy during Halloween for decorations.
Yeah.
At their house. We used to load semis that would carry anywhere from 700 to 800 of these square bales. And throughout my high school, every summer, probably 5-6 days a week, I load 2-3 semi loads of hay, either for horse farmers, for helping out raise beef, or a lot of it went to road construction. We did a lot of mulch hay that was sold for road construction.
Sure. Interesting. I had no clue. And you're right. There's this group of like kids, I'll say, where their summer jobs, you know, revolve around whether it's working on a farm or working for their dad or their uncle or whatever, doing whatever it is in the summertime. But they just kind of do, like, for a summer job, you know, when you grow up kind of in the middle of nowhere, I feel like you get a summer job, like not necessarily at like the family video or whatever, but like doing like whatever you can do. And there's a lot of farm work around that area.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, I was 13, 14, 15, 16. And what we got paid is $35 a load of hay. And
how many hours did it take you?
On a real good day, we could do a semi load in about an hour and a half.
Oh my gosh.
On a day where, you know, equipment, hay was coming off the baler slow, you know, maybe 3 hours.
Yeah.
But I mean, in the late 90s for a summer job as a high schooler, that was awesome.
Yeah.
And I got to hang around my family. So that was always a big plus too.
Yeah. So what was your first, you know, you didn't go to college. What was the first real job out of college for you then, if college wasn't the answer?
I feel like you're answering all my secret password questions.
Well, oh, is this how it is? I think you need to redo your passwords.
That's what they are. No, my first job was actually working in Office Max. I worked in their copy center. I did that for almost probably 5 years. And where I learned from that job was throughout the few years that I was working there, Marshfield is a town of 20,000 people, put a little context on this. And, you know, it was a pretty small market for a copy store, mm-hmm. Inside of an Office Max store. And this was back in the day when digital printing still wasn't really, it hadn't really matured yet. Mm-hmm. You know, there was Kinko's before FedEx bought out Kinko's, and that was a big deal, but those were in real big markets. And this is before the UPS store and all that. So we had this little copy center that was probably 500 square feet in this office supply store in Marshall, a town of 20,000. And at the time, there was almost 1,100 of these stores across the entire United States. And when we opened, I started working there the second year, going on the third year that they were open, and we were ranked 1,037. So out of 1,100 stores, we were basically 63 from the bottom, which honestly, based on the market that we were in, I mean, we were competing against like places like Milwaukee, yeah. Madison, 10 or 12 stores in Chicago. So, I mean, it wasn't really disappointing because it's the market that we were in. And over the next 3 years, we became the fastest growing store in the company. And at one point, we were the fastest growing store for 3 consecutive quarters in the entire company.
Wow.
So as an 18, 19, and 20-year-old kid, it was kind of cool, you know, on the conference calls. And this is back in the day when, like, conference calls were, like, a real big thing being mentioned across, you know, thousands of people listening across the whole company. So, and that's really where I gained my knowledge for understanding P&Ls, learning how to do sales, and just really starting to be able to connect with people and seeing how I could help deliver their passion. I've always been someone that experience has taught me that if I can find something in you that you want to do and you want to achieve, and I can become an element or a key in your success, I will be able to help you not only achieve it, but I will create a relationship with you that you will want to bring me along with you.
Yeah.
And if I can help you grow, I will grow because of that relationship. Yeah. And that's always been a big key to my success, is trying to find people that are really inspiring to be somebody and try to help them navigate where they're going. And that's why we have a planner today that's called The Key to Your Success.
Yes, which we're going to talk about that a lot more because it's really cool what you've done with that. And so I definitely want to talk about that more. But before we get to that, you know, I think being an entrepreneur is very like buzzworthy now. I don't know if you've seen that. There's this video going around on YouTube that is talking about, you know, guys in their early 20s who like classify themselves as entrepreneurs and like just all of like the turdy things that they do as like entrepreneurs. And it's really funny, you know, it's a skit, it's funny. But, you know, you started out as an entrepreneur, like before it was cool per se, you know, it's a cool thing. And I don't want to say it's easier now, but it's just different because of e-commerce and other things. But, you know, at the time, I think when you started, you know, with me thinking I'm going to build some businesses or I'm going to do this or I'm going to do that, it was not like as flashy, or it wasn't as like cut and dry of like, this is how you do it. So I want to give you credit in that, because like it was not as appealing back then to be an entrepreneur as it is now. What do you think?
Well, I think honestly, probably the thing that was most challenging for me in that time, especially my early 20s, is like you said, it wasn't flashy for young people to be in a business role. Now, yes, I had people that were my age that were maybe starting their own business, doing like, you know, cutting wood, or maybe they were in a small construction business, more, you know, on hands types of things.
Yeah.
But rarely did I ever find anyone that was starting a business that was in some type of professional service.
Yeah.
And probably the most challenging thing for me is almost every individual that I needed to develop a relationship was twice the age of me. They were in their 40s, 50s, or early 60s. And, you know, as I get older, and I'm 37 now, and I look back at people that are 18, 19, and 20, I'm very hesitant to take advice from them. I'm like, yes, I will listen because I've been there, but I'm very hesitant to really take advice and go somewhere with it. So I'm actually, to be frank with you, I'm really surprised I've been able to achieve what I have been able to achieve, especially in my 20s.
Yeah.
Because it was a fight. It was really a fight for people to not only hear what I had to tell them, but for them to actually believe it and trust it. And as someone that's naturally in sales, a lot of times when someone's selling you, they're telling you things that make sense. They're trying to sell you on the why buys and such, but they're necessarily not leaving out the reasons that you might not want to buy. Mm-hmm. And I've always taught people that when someone tells you no, they're not telling you N-O, they're telling you K-N-O-W. They don't know enough. You haven't given them enough knowledge for them to say yes. Mm-hmm. And that's why they're telling you no. And that's one thing in my 20s that I really lived on, was don't necessarily sell your product or yourself. Educate people on what this will do for them. Mm-hmm. And that's been very helpful for me as someone that's, tried to grow as an entrepreneur. At the same time, a lot of times I didn't take my own advice, meaning that I didn't take the same time to learn from others what I needed to do in business. And, you know, education comes at a cost. It doesn't matter if you go to school for it or school hard knocks, you are going to have to pay for something along the way. And I will say a lot of my 17, 18 years now in business, probably about 13 or 14 of them have been hard education. I maybe have a PhD without a degree in growing a business or two. But it's been a lot of fun. I've had this, if I ever write a book, the title of it will be something along the lines like, have fun in your 20s, figure out what you want to do in your 30s, do it in your 40s, so and make money in it so you can retire in your 50s. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of been my philosophy. And so far, I finally, in the age of 37, I've actually figured out what it is I want to do. So hopefully in my 40s, I can make some money doing it.
Well, it's funny you say that, though, because, you know, entrepreneurs, you know, have a tendency to, they don't, very few of them start one business and call it good. It's kind of this euphoric thing that the entrepreneurs I've talked to, you know, it feels great. It's like this high they get. And so you have started, you know, several businesses or been a part, you know, been a founding player in several businesses. And through that, you know, some of them, I'm sure you can attest to this, some of them are big successes and are still going and take off and do wonderful things. And others of them, you know, it doesn't bloom into what you maybe envisioned. And it's one of those things where I'm sure you have to weed through it and continue to learn from it. But I mean, what would you say in terms of, you know, taking, there's risks you take and you kind of have to throw spaghetti at the wall for a little bit with some of these, correct?
Absolutely. And that's probably one thing that's most challenging about starting a business or being an entrepreneur is if you need capital, you need to go out and get capital from other investors. You need to sell a bank or an SBA loan officer or a board on what your plans are. And as someone that's never been in business or someone that's first starting to be in business, you know, it's not as easy as, okay, I'm going to make a product or have a service. I'm going to sell it above my expenses, do the work. And when I get a return, I'm going to be in profit. And it's not that easy. Mm-hmm. You know, you might be able to work 40 hours a week, but how many of those hours can you actually bill? You know, can you bill 20 hours of your time? So that means half of your time you're not getting paid for. So you have to make up that time in the 20 hours you are billing for, but then you got to cover any rent or any overhead, any licenses, any subscription services that you might have. And that is just you as an individual person running a hustle. Mm-hmm. And that's why when I hear the word hustle, I hear so many people say, yeah, I'm able to make a lot of money on the side. And I ask them, well, is it really a side gig or are you going to turn it into something long term? And a lot of times they're like, oh, yeah, I want to turn this into my full time job. And I start to ask them questions about, OK, what are you charging? And when they start to look at the fact that if they want to make this a full time career, they almost have to sometimes increase their fees 50 to 100% to be able to make sense of that. Because to grow it and to maybe bring other people on board to make it more profitable, you have to then pay for their wages as well. So, you know, entrepreneurship is something that over time that I've learned is you have to have a lot of passion for it. Mm-hmm. You have to have a clear vision on what it is you want to do. And you have to be a great communicator because the moment you can get more people to understand what it is that you are trying to achieve mm-hmm. so that they can start to take in what it is that you're doing and start to find seats in your vision mm-hmm. and run with it, you're going to be more successful because I don't know too many millionaires that only have one band shops. It usually doesn't work that way.
That's so true. 1000%. You need to have people who will buy into your vision and believe in that vision. And whether you're just, you know, and I think sometimes too, it's like, sure, you want to bring on employees and other things too. But I think also, in my opinion, it's about having people who don't actively like shit on your dream. So whether that's your spouse or your friends, or you know what I mean? Like, you know, my spouse isn't on my payroll. My friends aren't on my payroll. But having those people there that just aren't going to shit on like your dream and what you're doing, like that is so valuable. And I know that you have a wife and two kids, and I'm sure you will tell me like, having her support and just the support of people next to you who are like, we're going to go along for the ride and we're going to, you know, hang on. That means a lot too.
Yeah. And you're 100% right. You can't have people shitting on your ideas. You can't have people blowing smoke up your ass either. And and you as the entrepreneur have to be able to realize, you know, when is something too good to be true, but yet when are you not doing enough work to make this a real life experience? And, you know, that's probably some of the hardest things that you have to, you know, understand is you have to know when you have not achieved your own success. You know, no different like buying stocks or being an investor in something else. You're investing yourself in entrepreneurship. And sometimes you need to figure out, what is my exit strategy? I have always told every person I've been in business with, we are only as strong as our exit strategy. Because if we have to get out of this and we lose everything, is it worth getting in it? Mm-hmm. And if you have a strong exit strategy, it makes the risk it's a lot easier to take on risk. Mm-hmm. It also, it allows you to be able to adjust your risk strategy or your exit strategy as you move along, because things are going to change. Relationships are going to change. You're going to grow as an individual. People around you are going to grow. You're going to have some great employees who are going to grow out of your own capabilities. You know, early on, I knew that we could only provide so much for some of our staff. And I knew that there were certain individuals that were going to want to achieve a lot more in life. And I was very honest with them. I said, hey, I'm okay with you being here today. If you're using this opportunity to move along, as long as when you're here today, you're giving me everything you got. And I will totally respect your will and drive to move in your life. And a lot of different business owners don't appreciate people in their own organizations wanting to grow and maybe even grow ahead of them. But that's okay. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what makes someone that's able to see everything around them and understand where they're successful and they're not successful a better entrepreneur, because that helps you navigate where you need to put your interest and where you need to invest time and energy. And it also might be able to help you understand, what areas am I not good at? Am I not good at accounting? Don't focus on that. If you're really good at making widgets, focus on making the widget and have other people that help you in other areas.
Now, I want to specifically ask you about one of your businesses, OnFocus. And, you know, it's totally like you're the creator of the businesses, but this in my mind, you know, from how I know you, is one of your more successful ones. And I've seen it grow so much and it's continuing to grow. But, you know, when you started OnFocus, when you had the idea for OnFocus, you know, and you've told me this story before, but you saw a hole in the market of, you know, this community and the fact that it was hard for people in this community to get news and get the facts to them. You know, there were a couple of newspapers, but they were owned by big companies, and you felt like the company, you know, they were being run by companies that like weren't even in this city. So you were like, there's a hole here. People here are not able to get the news that matters to them, get it in a timely fashion. And you just kind of birthed up, you know, this idea. But, you know, I'm making it sound really simple, but can you walk us through like some of the process in that idea and how Focus like came to life? And then, I mean, I'd love to ask you more about like how it has grown, because it has grown so much and continues to grow. But first, I want to hear about how it just came to be.
So I told you a few minutes ago, you're only strong as your exit strategy. So it was probably in 2013. I was looking at my exit strategy for our print shop. And at the time, one of the questions that really just kind of like hit me in the face is, what happens to my print shop if it doesn't succeed? You know, we've been in business at this point for 9 years. The paper industry was kind of falling at a pretty fast decline. Digital printers were becoming more and more popular. People were using email more than ever. And I thought to myself, what is going to happen in the next few years if this fails and I have $500,000 in printing equipment sitting here?
Yeah.
And I said to myself, what is this printing equipment going to do for me? And I had this like moment of reality that I realized that you can't be in business if what you're in business for doesn't help yourself to some level. And that might sound selfish, but it is the honest to God truth, because that printing equipment, those presses, I don't even have a printer at my house, believe it or not. And I hate telling people that because I print paper for a living as well as other things, but that's a big part of it. So as I was sitting there and I was looking at, you ever hear of a swath?
I don't think so. No.
It's basically a measure or a test that you put yourself for. You look at all your strengths.
SWOT
analysis.
Yeah, strengths, weaknesses, opportunity. Yeah, of course.
One of my weaknesses is grammar. So it was put
out. Yes.
So
I can attest.
As I was going through this, I was looking at all my weaknesses in the printing organization. And as I started to look at these weaknesses and some of these threats, I started to look at the industries around me in my own community and said, well, my competitors have those same weaknesses and those same threats. So we're in the same boat together. Somebody is going to rise up and above this. And when I realized that in a rural market space, that there was not a strong digital player. Everything was tangible and paper, and most digital assets and resources were found in California, New York City, or in some big area, and there wasn't like a local presence. So I said, what if we developed a digital asset that could help promote our organizations and give our organizations a place on the digital map? Create a real estate. And what happened if we gave other businesses that have these same threats that we do the same opportunities? And what happened if we could then from there find ways for our community to embrace all those businesses, but find a common interest in the content that was present on a daily basis? Mm-hmm. And that is really how OnFocus came. What I wanted to do is I wanted a platform that we could provide news, entertainment, content for our rural community, but be able to give the business organizations that have supported us through the print shop or through other business adventures the opportunity to really have a place so that the threats that we face were not the same threats that our entire community faced. And that's really was the birth of OnFocus. And it was the first time ever that I actually created a business or an organization that was really something that at the end of the day was for us, mm-hmm. that I saw a benefit in for our own team. And it wasn't just a shop full of printing presses.
Yeah. And it's really, I mean, you were absolutely spot on that there was a need for people in this community to, you know, not only for the businesses, but you're serving the citizens in a way that, you know, is so important because there was so much happening in the city that was not, you know, people just didn't know. No one knew what was going on. And it was, you know, to be able to inform those people. I mean, it does so many different things. You guys also do so much live streaming and, you know, for sports. So like, and especially in the land of COVID, it has been so great. I know for grandmas and grandpas and people who can't travel to be able to watch, you know, little Billy's basketball game. And so there's so many things that it offers. There's so many different legs of it that you guys have really, you know, taken the needs of the community and served them. You know, you mentioned serving people in the beginning, and I think that's what it does.
Absolutely. And it during COVID, it's been a really strong resource for the businesses that we work with as well as ourselves. I mean, when I look at, we were down 1 month in 2020, 83%. 83% of our business evaporated because of the measures that were put in place by our government. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to get into political conversations if those were the right situations to be in or the right. I think there was so much that was taking place and we were learning about this virus and trying to cope with a pandemic that certain measures had to be taken. So let's not test the measures, but we can test the businesses and organizations that were triumphant. If you're going to be an entrepreneur is someone at the end of the day, when you get dealt a new hand, a new set of cards, you figure the best way to play off those hands. And we were down 83%. And I remember looking at our cash flow and our burn rate. And I said, this is not, even after being in business for nearly 15 years, this is not something that we can just deal with for a period of time, you know, maybe a month or two. But after that, it's going to be a real challenge. So we went to our platform and we said, how are we as a team going to organize this business? And we finished the year quarter over quarter ahead of where we were in 2019, mm-hmm. because we took all of our tools and assets and we just restructured them. And you've seen that with a lot of businesses that have done really well. And one of them that I really give a shout out to is Hershey's. Now, you're familiar with Hershey's candy bars, right?
Of course.
Okay. You ever have a s'more?
Duh.
Okay. So first off, one thing that's really cool is there was a farm in Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania.
That for over 100 years made all of the milk or produced all the milk for Hershey's. In the late 2000s, that farm sold. Our print shop printed all the sales catalogs for that farm. It was one of the probably one of the most coolest experiences. And I actually, what's funny is it just came to mind today because I was listening to the earnings report for Hershey's, and they had huge success last year. But what they did is they took their principles and they pivoted them to promote a lot of things that made sense in the time. You know, they showed how Hershey's were a fun food, how s'mores was a safe outdoor activity for families to do. And they pivoted their current resources and brought them into light in a situation where people just, they energized behind them. And we were able to do that this last year, utilizing our platform to showcase different products and services that we offer and take them to the masses globally.
Yeah. And, you know, you guys, first of all, sometimes it can be hard for businesses to see the quote unquote writing on the wall, to see that, you know, what they had done, what got them to where they are, isn't going to keep them where they are or make them go to that next level. So I've always, you know, I give you the credit because you've always been good at, from what I know of you and have seen of you, of like seeing the writing on the wall and knowing when to pivot. Some people don't know when to pivot. And you know, we see that in the paper industry. You mentioned the paper industry. My dad was in the paper industry in the early 80s. And when my parents were first married, you know, he was in paper sales. And he was a pretty high executive at Butler Paper and at Georgia Pacific, these huge paper companies when Wisconsin Rapids was having its heyday. You know, my dad was one of those executives. And I don't know if it was, you know, just forward thinking or whatever, but he got to the point where he was like, I need to get out of here. I'm not sure if this industry, you know, can handle it. And he somehow foresaw that, you know, something was coming. They also, you know, they were moving him around a lot, and they had started, my parents had started having kids, and they didn't want to move around anymore. So he got out of the paper industry, and God willing, he did, because they, you know, for a long time, I think the paper industry has kind of refused to see the writing on the wall. We've seen that in Rapids, you know, compared to what's going on there. The good thing about your print shop and what I think you guys have done even there is you guys, like, you print t-shirts, you print banners, like you guys don't just print like, you know, pamphlets or whatever, you know, you guys print all types of stuff. So I know even when it comes to your print shop, you guys have worked really hard to pivot what you do there. And so much of what you guys do is, you know, things in the community. I saw you guys were printing, you know, masks with, you know, the school, you know, logos on them, which was really fun for the kids. You know, all the kids need to wear masks, and just being able to see that writing on the wall, it takes, you know, some guts. And I think you guys are great at that.
Yeah. And pivoting is a huge part of being successful and knowing when to pivot.
Yeah.
And just being, again, it goes back to, you have to be honest with yourself. If something isn't working, you have to ask yourself, why is it not working? And then make some tough decisions. And that's probably where one of my faults are. I have a hard time making tough decisions. I have had to deal with a lot of them, but I have a hard time with them. Thankfully, I have a lot of opportunities that have always been able to get me to move forward. But I think that's because as you continue to look for ideas and look for opportunities, you will have less struggles. As long as you keep, it's a numbers game. It really is.
So, you know, in terms of, you talked about the exit strategy and about focus, and I know focus is not, you know, while it's very successful, it continues to grow. You guys are doing a great job and really serving your community when it, you know, in a place that it needs. But I know that that's not your angle. And the thing I know about you is that you are a million ideas a minute type of guy. And sometimes, you know, Brianna, my best friend, who is your right-hand gal in the business, wants to kill you because of it, because you have all the ideas and then you throw them to her to see what sticks on the wall. So I know sometimes she wants to kill you for that, but it also means that I know you have other things going on. And one of the ones that I know that you're really passionate about is your digital planner that you've developed and has taken off. And I know that you're really passionate about it. And so I want you to tell us some about the planner and tell us some about, you know, how you got the idea to do it and then how it's going, you know, launching a digital planner.
So this is probably the second time in my life I actually did something for myself when I saw an opportunity. So I look back at the print shop, and we started in 2004. We had great success. I mean, double digit growth every year. And I started in my parents' basement next to our oil furnace. And the picture of that first office is, it looks pretty freaky, scary. My daughter would not go down there. By all means, she never would. But we grew every year by double digits. And I'm most impressed. One day in 2009, one of my associates who just very much paid attention to the economy said, you know, if we can grow during a recession, we will do great things when we move forward. And that lived with me. Well, we came out of a recession in 2010, 2011, and the rest of the world really started to take off. And we got to 2012, just after the iPad was introduced by Steve Jobs. And it was one of the first times ever that our company saw negative growth. Hmm. And it saw negative growth the following year. Mm. And it saw negative growth the following year. And that's hard to accept as an entrepreneur that when everybody else is doing great, you're struggling. Mm-hmm. Because the moments when you were doing really great and everybody else is struggling, it didn't feel the same because you were still going. And one of my goals in 2016, I remember that when I got through 2016, I said to myself, I'm going to run 1,000 miles. I was in my early mid 30s, and I thought one of my goals is going to be to run 1,000 miles this year. So if you do the math on that, that's roughly 20 miles a week. Mm-hmm. And I started that New Year's resolution at the first of the year, and I started running. And by the spring of that year, I was getting a little bit of pain. Now I'm getting older, so and I'm running and thinking, oh boy, what's going on here? And I ended up going in, I had a physical or something, and the doctor asked me a question, and I explained that I was having some pain. And he, looked me over and stuff, and he said to me, would you recall ever in a time when you didn't have the pain? And I said, oh yeah, absolutely. And he goes, well, when was that? I said, well, I know for a fact during the holidays between Thanksgiving and Christmas, I didn't have any pain. He goes, okay. He goes, anything you're doing different between now and then? Anything happen? Anything you're doing different? And I kind of looked at him and I realized it was going to be a dumb answer, but I had to say it. Yeah, I made this New Year's resolution to run 1,000 miles, and I've been running 20 miles a week ever since. Yeah. And apparently it caught up to me. And the answer was, well, maybe you need to take a little break or rest or figure something out in your routine that, and it wasn't like an aching pain, but it was still painful enough to bring it up. And I remember leaving there and I thought to myself, what am I doing different today in my organizations that I wasn't doing in 2008, 2009, 2010? And it was the best $400 I ever spent, but it wasn't, on a medical advice, but I realized I stopped daily planning. When the iPad came out, I thought to myself, this is awesome. This device, I'm going to get rid of notepads and binders and all these sticky notes. I'm going to have everything right in front of me, and it's going to be great. Well, what it was like an entrepreneur like clutch. What I mean by that is like my brain was wired this way, and I was trying to re-hardwire it another way because I wanted to adapt to this technology. But the technology wasn't there to help me move forward as an individual. And I knew then at that moment, I needed to go back to daily planning. I went back to daily planning. I first started with a Franklin Covey, and this is what I was used to. And I didn't like that there wasn't a lot of system or process behind it. And then I saw the full focus planner, and I saw the passion planner, and I went into those different planning systems, and I felt comfortable, but I would use them for 30 days, 45 days, and I would see success in them, but I didn't want to carry them with me.
Yeah.
And at that time, the Surface Pro came out, and it was the first time that there was actually a writing utensil that actually worked, in my opinion, with a tablet that provided an ink-like experience. So I sat down, I looked at the planner, I saw some of the things that I thought were instrumental to being able to carry out my goals and vision. I designed it, placed it in a PDF annotation app, and started planning myself. And over that year was the first time we see and saw growth as an organization. It was the year we really saw Tri-Media take off. Premier started to rebound. It was the year that we created OnFocus and Explore. And I really started to see my vision come together. And at the end of the year, or as it got close to the end of the year, I don't know if it was my insurance person, but we were working on what our work comp numbers was, and to say, wow, you guys you've seen some pretty amazing success across the board. And what to do? And I says, I just started planning again. And as simple as that sounds, it's so important for people to recognize, if you have an idea, if you have a goal, mm-hmm. if you can lay out the groundwork, if you can determine what steps that you need to take, what hurdles or obstacles you need to remove, and put together a safe timeline that allows you to keep balancing your life, mm-hmm. but yet be able to move your ideas and thoughts forward, you will find success. You really will. As long as you understand what success looks like.
Yeah.
And you're able to see success along the way. I always tell people success isn't at the end of the road. It's all the milestones in the journey, right? You know, when you look at relationships, you know, you kiss a girl. I mean, you can kiss guys, but if I kiss a girl when I first start dating someone, that to me is successful. I mean, that's exciting, right?
Yeah.
And we go on a second date. That's another milestone. That's successful. Yeah. Not saying that I kiss usually on the first date, but but the scenario goes along. And then as that relationship blooms and blossoms, there's all these little hallmark things that take place and are all successes. Mm-hmm. You know, how many times do you meet somebody and say, I'm going to marry that individual? You don't, right?
Hopefully not many, but.
But yet at the same time, you have in mind when you're dating the goal of getting married.
And then that's not even the end goal because it continues to go from there. And
you die together. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. But the thing is, where people find success is when they determine those milestones along the way and they take time to celebrate those mm-hmm. as they move forward in this journey of life.
Yeah.
So really what it came down to is, you know, I saw that I was having success with this. I recognized the struggle and I went back to some of what really made me interested in what gave me the spark to be an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. And that was really, I wanted to be a key in somebody else's success. I wanted to be there and help them through their journey and be someone that could either help them market their business or understand what it meant to grow their organization, what logistics they might need to put in place, how they might need to expand their brand, any of those things. I wanted to be a key in their success. And that's really what it came down to. And when we started developing the planner, it wasn't just about developing a daily planner. It was about developing a 3 to 5 year professional building system that helped you get through that time and focus on the vision you have in front of you and be able to achieve those milestones in a monthly, weekly, and daily fashion.
Yeah.
And I say 3 to 5 years because I'm a hard believer that this world spins as fast as it does, that every 3 to 5 years, no matter what organization that you're in, you need to take a hard stop. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what's so cool about this pandemic. And I'll just side a rail for 1 second. This pandemic has made everyone take a hard stop.
Agreed.
And if you haven't taken the time to look at yourself, the world around you, stop right now and do so mm-hmm. because we're coming out of this pandemic. And the last thing you want to do is when we come out of this, everyone that's been thinking about what they want to do when they get past this pandemic, they're going to go to the moon. And the last thing you want to do is be left here on the ground floor when you haven't utilized this time. And some people I have talked to that there's still plenty of time to do that, but you haven't done it already. Just start writing notes.
Yeah.
You know, if the pandemic ends in the next 90 days, where do you want to be in the next 90 days, mm-hmm. the next 6 months, 2 years down the road? And all you have to do is keep that journal out those thoughts and ideas, those milestones, the things you need to do to achieve your success, the hurdles you need to overcome. And when you feel that you're out of the pandemic and you're ready to move forward, start with day one.
Yeah.
And punch through it.
And that's, I totally agree with you. I think the people who are going to, you know, this pandemic, this is a time where we should be, you know, making do with what's going on in the world. And if you're not doing that, then, you know, there are going to be people who pass you by in whatever regard it is and making the most of this time now. What I really like about your planner and what I admire about what you've built is that it's really like a system, would you say, you know, where, it, you know, a planner, you know, I think of a planner, it's almost not doing it justice to call it planner. I think of like the days of the week and there's Monday and Tuesday and there's spaces for you to write your things. And your planner does have that, but it's also very much a system of how to set goals and achieve said goals. Would you say that's correct?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
100%. We focus on planning is a big task.
It is.
And there's so many different levels to it. But really the key to your success or anybody's success is to start with each day. And I tell somebody that you need to indicate up to three things. And I say up to three things because I think anything more than three is too ambitious. But three things at the end of the day that if you get all three of these things done, it doesn't matter if it's 6 a.m., 9 a.m., 5 in the afternoon, or 11 o'clock at night, as long as you get those three things done, you are successful. Now, might only be one thing that you're focusing on for today, but the idea is by you being able to block off 15 minutes, an hour, to focus on that list, or even more time than that, to focus on those key things, those key action steps, and you do that day after day after day, and a week passes, a month passes, and those items were part of a bigger plan,
yeah,
you will see those milestones start to develop and you'll feel success. And that'll drive you to want to do more. And it doesn't matter if you're in a position where you have extra time or no time at all. Everyone can make a point to invest 15 to 30 minutes a day into their key action steps and goals.
Yeah. With another one of the things I think is really unique, you know, now digital planners are more common because, you know, we're living in such a digital world. But one of the things that's different about the Key to Success Planner is you guys offer a ton of support. And I know that because Brianna is on calls, you know, taking support calls, you're on support calls, you know, and that's just people who like, you know, message in on your site and like have a question or like have like, you know, how would I do this? And you guys offer that support. So it's not just that you buy this planner. One of the things that you guys do a lot of other companies or no other company is doing right now is giving that support and kind of building a community around it, correct?
Oh, absolutely. And I think what's one thing that people have to recognize, there is a real big difference between electronic notification service and a digital planner. Mm-hmm. Electronic notification service is iCal on your mm-hmm. iPhone, Google Calendar. Those are services where you type in, you enter in activities, dates, and times. And it gives you a bell, a whistle, a chime, a vibrate, whatever the story is, when it's time for you to be en route or present for that task or that meeting. It does not help you plan to be more efficient with that time, develop what you want from those meetings or activities, or be able to digest what was important from the discussions you have. Good planning is taking the time that you have and processing it and squeezing the most lemonade out of it, right? The more juice you can squeeze out of the time, the better you're gonna find success. And I struggle with people that tell me, I want a planner that integrates into my iPhone, into my Google Calendar, and I wanna be notified of all my tasks. If I had my wife running around the house all day telling me everything I had to do, whenever I had to do it, one, I wouldn't feel very successful as an individual, and two, she'd be very tired of telling me what to do. Mm-hmm. We need to take ownership as adults.
Yeah.
And I believe that starts with daily planning. Now, I sell a daily planner, so I'll put that out there. But I really believe when you own what you're doing and you're actually managing that time in a fashion where you're putting your commitments on paper, there's something about handwriting and being able to tool your thoughts on paper, you're more committed to it. And yes, you can definitely use those electronic notification services, but they don't really help you get into successful routines and patterns. Mm-hmm. And you know, you use a daily planner, you know, and I would have to admit to some level that you understand the thought process behind that. Because us as individuals, when we take that time to navigate the next day or the next week,
yeah,
we see opportunities that didn't necessarily exist in our schedule.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, you know, moreover than just having a planner, because I do have a planner, I have a separate just like notebook. And at the end of every week, I do a recap of the week where I take half a page and I write like a short recap of the week. part of this is the fact that I like journaling and I want to be able to look back on this sometime. So part of it is just, I like journaling, but I take a recap of the week. And then I, underneath that, I write about where I can improve, like where I fell short. I write, you know, goal, like things I hit, you know, high points of the week. You know, I put out this video, I did this. And then underneath that, I put out like where my focus is for next week, like where I need to pick up the slack. So having that, you know, as you said, looking at it as a whole picture is huge. I want to know, you know, what's your advice to people who want to be entrepreneurs? What is, you know, it's hard to say just single advice because there's no single advice to be an entrepreneur. But if you had one thing you could tell a kid out there who wants to be an entrepreneur, what would it be?
Have a passion for what it is that you want to do and be able to find people that have a need for what it is that you love. Because when you love something and people truly see that you're passionate about it, they will have more willingness to trust you with the service or product that you're willing to provide them. And I spoke earlier about being 19, 20, 21, being those early years in selling people that were in their 40s, 50s, and 60s on what we had to offer. I truly believe the reason why they gave me the business isn't because I had the best product or the best price. It's because I had the most passion for what it was that we had to offer. And I was willing and able to connect my abilities to the needs of their organization.
Makes sense. Have passion. Don't do it. Don't half-ass it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Tell people where they can find your planner and where they can find you. I know you have a YouTube page where you give out a lot of really helpful tips for planning and using your planner in OneNote and other technology type things. So tell everyone where they can find you.
Planner is really easy. Key2successplanner.com. And if you jump on YouTube, really, or Google or any of the major search engines, just type in Brandon Bohndorfer, and that's Brandon, B-R-A-N-D-E-N, Bohndorfer, B-O-D-E-N-D-O-R-F-E-R. And I know you're going to put in the show notes, but
yep.
It's pretty straightforward. I'm a pretty simple guy in central Wisconsin, not a lot of flash, but a lot of fun. And that's really how you connect.
That was entrepreneur and creative Brandon Bohndorfer. For more of my conversations with people like Brandon, you can go to carriegillespie.com/podcast. That has the backlog of all the episodes I have ever done before. You can keep up with the show by following along on Instagram. We are at Candidly Speaking Podcast, and I am at carrie.gillespie. Before I sign off for today, I just want to encourage y'all, if you are enjoying the show, please, it would mean the world to me if you went to Apple Podcasts and left a rating and just wrote a short review about why you love the show. That stuff is so great for my soul personally, honestly. And it's also great for growing the show and just helping us get feedback and get more great, amazing people on the show so I can chat with them. So thank you so much, y'all. I really appreciate you being here. We'll see you next time.